Waddle and Sylvie. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on ESPN Chicago.
Season 3 of Very Cavallari, or as Jay likes to call it, Barely Cavallari, starts tonight.
Let's bring him in. Jay Cutler joins Waddle and Sylvie. Hey, Jay.
Hey, just to clarify, I've never called it that. That was your your guys' name for it. While it is clever, I'm not
okay,
sure
we'll take it. We'll take credit for that. So yeah. Are you geared up for season 3's premiere tonight?
No, I won't watch it.
Do you believe the Brady stuff then? Like, so he Instagrammed yesterday. What was that noise you just made?
I was talking to one of my buddies after that game. I just find it so hard to believe that after, you know, 20 years of brilliant career and success he's had and the continuity that he's going to jump ship and go somewhere else.
See, we're trolling hard right there. I mean, Mike Tirico is on hold in Santa Clara getting ready for the NBC broadcast that he's so good at. And he got so sick for years bringing up Cutler.
Speaking of that, you want to hear some hardcore trolling. Hey, Mike, do you think the Bears could have made it into the postseason this year if Jay had been their quarterback?
Without question. It's my man. That's my man. You talking about me trolling. You frauds. How about you trolling with the trying to get to, hey, you're going to watch the debut of season 3. You guys are unbelievable.
Yeah. I watched it last night.
I did.
What's the name of the show? Very Cavallari?
Yes.
How about you guys spending your valuable time, the greatest city for sports in America, Chicago, and you guys are out there trying to talk reality shows.
Have you seen our football team, Mike?
Hey, look. You guys know, and your listeners know, and they're sick of this. I live in Detroit. I don't know if you saw the stat that somebody on the interweb put out yesterday on the Twitter-mobile, that the city of Detroit teams, all four major professional sports teams, so the Wings and the Tigers and the Pistons and the Lions, they had more losses than any city's teams in 1 year ever. 2019, Detroit was the loserest city in sports ever. Now, bless the person who counted it, but just so you know, we're still talking sports in Detroit. You're down the Very Cavallari road. That's all I have to say. Troll. Call me a troll.
Did you see the Blackhawks had a goalie score on them yesterday?
Yeah. I saw Pekka Rinne from the back with the it was a nice comeback too after being down 3-0. You were feeling like they were going to tie the game, and it's a new decade, so we're starting someplace where all teams can ramp up to heights at the end of the decade. Yeah.
So let's before we get into the playoff games, let's get to what Jay was just talking about and what we've talked a lot about early this week and everyone's talking about is the Brady stuff and his Instagram posts. There are a lot of NFL insiders like Shefty and others. Peter King joined us a couple days ago, and he thought it would be hard for Brady to go back there. What does your gut tell you?
Yeah, this could be one grand conspiracy to give King, Schefter, Florio, Mortensen, Breer, Rappaport, give all these guys cheese for 3 months. But in all seriousness, it felt real. I had the pleasure of doing the game for Westwood One on national radio Saturday with Tony Baselli and Laura Oakman. And as we left after our post-game responsibilities, I turned around and just felt compelled to take a picture of the stadium. It was foggy. It was rainy. It was kind of dank and cloudy. It had all the garbage in the stadium. It pretty much was emptied out. But it just felt like the next time I'm at that stadium, it's not going to be the same Patriots. Mm. It just has that feel around it. If it wasn't, why did Alex Guerrero, his trainer, sell the house? Why did Tom sell the house? Why is Tom, you know, kind of doing all of these messages that are saying to everyone, I might not be back? There's got to be some reason why. It just doesn't feel like it's going to be the triangle of Kraft, Belichick, and Brady back next year. If it is, it's easy to pick up and where they left off, and let's go try to get more receivers and all that stuff. But it just feels like it's not going to be the same.
We all know there's not a lot of depth to me in my thinking, so I try to subscribe to just some common sense every now and again. So, Mike, when I look at this situation, I say, what motivates Tom Brady at this point in his career? And my answer to my own question was winning. And then I ask myself, where does he have the best chance to win? And I keep coming back to the Patriots. But I know that, like everybody else who's smarter than me and more connected than me, all feels that it's not going to be back to the Patriots.
No, I'm with you. Like, I don't know. I don't know where it is or why it is, Tom. When you start looking around at all these teams, I don't know. Okay, the Chargers have, you know, Gordon and Eckler, and they've got the receivers, and they've got Hunter Henry, a good tight end. So they've got people there, but the offensive line is not that good. You know, there's the Miami rumors that are starting to bubble here a little bit. Is he really going to go in the division somewhere else? Is it a play for the growth of the TB12 brand? Let's remember this, too. You know, Tom was hurt at the end of the year. His elbow wasn't right.
Right.
His foot was hurt. He is unbelievable at the level he's played for his age, probably the greatest a football player has played at that age. But he's not the same guy. So is he going to go somewhere and elevate a team and stay healthy through the next couple of years? Can you invest in that for two or three years? Right. I don't know that answer. Just because he says he's going to play till 45 doesn't mean he's going to be great until he's 45.
When I feel dirty for even suggesting this, Mike, but is there a chance that if you invest $25 to $30 million a year in him and for 2 years, that you're not going to get your money's worth? And then you put yourself in a salary cap bind, and I mean, it sounded good, but then it just didn't go well.
Well, I mean, this is pure speculation, okay? I label this warning, warning, warning. This is pure speculation. Well, let's just play this out. Like, the Chargers got nothing going on.
Right?
They don't know if Rivers is going to be the quarterback or not. They're going into L.A. where they have two teams. The Rams have much more sizzle than the Chargers do at the moment. They've got to sell seat licenses and seats, and I don't know what else you sell when you're selling, but they got to sell whatever they have, they got to sell. They have zero fan base, right? Do they go nuts and say Brady? And if you say Brady for 2 years in L.A., guess what? I'm buying. I'll go watch for two years. But my 12 Brady Chargers powder blue jersey will sell bigger than anything's ever sold in the history of things. You know, so does a team do that with no future right now and just put the 2 years into this and then somewhere along the way draft a quarterback and say, we'll figure it out? That is one of the options if Tom's interested in that. Right. We don't know what's driving Tom right now. Is it where Giselle wants to be? Is it where they want to raise a family? Is it a place to grow the TB12 brand in some, you know, market where, like L.A. or Miami, where it's sunny out and people are more active than, you know, us slugs in the Midwest and the Northeast? I don't know what it is, but I think it might be something to that.
Sylvie has said this, and I agree with it to a certain degree, but correct me if I'm not speaking correctly for you. You think it's mostly about wanting to be loved and that love coming from Bill Belichick.
Financially, emotionally, he wants to be treated like Tom effing Brady, not just
by
Tom,
his coach.
Right, not just Tom Brady like all these other guys who left town and played elsewhere.
Okay, but you know, maybe that's good. And I'm not disputing any of that, and I probably agree with most of what you said, but here's the one reply to that. What have the Patriots done better than any organization in any sport in our lifetime that has helped them stand out for 20 years? They've said goodbye too early as opposed to too late. Who got too old playing with the Patriots? Almost no one. Who left New England at the end of their career, went somewhere else, and played better? Almost no one. So if the Patriots don't want to say, hey, here's the $27, $30 million, whatever that number is, I don't know, let the cap people do that. Here's the number to show you we love you and we want you and there's no hometown discount and all that other stuff. Maybe they know that it's not going to get better and we've got to start retooling here. So we're going to say goodbye even to Tom Brady before it's too late, which would be fascinating. It doesn't feel right. But this is a ruthless business, and there's been no place that has been, from a football standpoint, more cold and ruthless and not hanging on for the sake of kumbaya than the Patriots. So this would be right in what the Patriots have done for two decades, and it's why for two decades they're on the top of the mountain and everybody else is scrambling like Fred Flintstone to try to get up the mountain.
Well, Mike, what's the secret sauce for Belichick? And like, because in baseball, when Bill James came out with all the analytical thinking, now, 15 years later, all baseball executives think alike. They do the same stuff. What does Belichick do to stay ahead of the curve of everybody?
So if there are two, first off, he is a brilliant coach. He's a brilliant coach of every aspect of the team. I'll give you a quick story. They had a tragedy in training camp in the early 2000s. Their quarterback coach, Dick Rabine, dies right at the start of training camp there. Charlie Weiss is the offensive coordinator. Belichick jumps in to take some of the role of the quarterback coach, starts meeting with Tom Brady and the other quarterbacks, and presents the opposing defense from a defensive perspective so the quarterbacks understand, wow, this defense is this, here are the rules. To this day, that meeting still goes on. He's redefined the role of a head coach or how the defense can teach the offense how to be better. They have always been the home office of smart in the NFL. If there's anything in Bill's doublespeak at press conferences where he tries not to give much, if there's anything there that jumps out always, he'll describe every player as, he's very smart. They love smart players. Look at Kyle Van Noy, Lions second-round pick, did nothing in Detroit, goes there, he's been one of their best players on defense the last 2.5 years. They found what Kyle Van Noy does best. If you heard the Joe Judge press conference with the Giants yesterday,
right?
That's what he kept saying. My job is, our coaches, you got to find out, what does Tom Waddle, what does Sylvie, what do they do the best?
Right.
And you've got to coach him to put him in the position where he can be great. And that is what they have done with versatility, variety, and smart players better than anybody anywhere. And that's not analytics. It's not numbers. It's not we can go steal that. It's brilliance. And, you know, sometimes the smart person in the room wins. And he's the smartest person in the room every time he walks in the room.
Mike Tirico joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. So let's advance this to the Bears. And this is a conversation, yeah, Waddle and I have said. And maybe you don't want to get specific because you're way above the situation and we're here every day. But the
we lay in the weeds and we just, yeah, we do the dirty work.
You know, but I believe that Matt Nagy is a good head coach, but maybe not a good game day play caller. That there's a lot to handle as a young guy. And that giving up the play calling duties may be the best thing and would not make him a failure because he's already shown you he's set a good culture, he's good with the guys, no one quits on him, and he can coach like Belichick can, whether it's to help the defense or the offense and manage a game day and be a CEO. But Waddle says, look, he brought him here because he's a good young play caller, and if he gives it up, then that would be admitting failure. What do you think about that in general terms?
I think there's no blanket statement to your play caller has to be, your head coach has to be your play caller given his expertise on that side of the ball. And Baltimore is the best team in the NFL this year, and John Harbaugh is a special teams guy, 1 year as a receivers coach. He didn't call an offense or a defense, okay? I just think we need to remember that Matt Nagy was the coach of the year last year. I set a role in front of him at NFL Honors the Saturday before the Super Bowl, and he won the award for Coach of the Year. And he was terrific. He didn't get dumb in 5 minutes, right?
Well, no, but to clarify, I'm still saying he's a really good coach.
Yes.
Maybe not a good OC. I mean, they were 21st in offense the year he won the Coach of the Year, and they regressed to 29.
Yeah. Did the quarterback play well at any point this year?
No. Well, yeah. Now, one or two games.
A couple games here and there. By and large, you know, he didn't play great. Is that a byproduct of the head coach? Is that a product of the OC? Is that a product of we invested in this guy and he's not as great as we thought? There is still a learning curve in this league. Just because teams hit it right away doesn't mean that they find it. Now, Patrick Mahomes was a great fit for all that Andy Reid does. Was Matt Nagy hamstrung in any way of play calling because the running back position wasn't as good, the offensive line didn't hold up, lack of a tight end, exactly, huge in this offense, all of those things? The answer might be yes. The answer might be I got to dial back. You know, I talked to an NFL coach who I've gotten to know pretty well and was talking to him during the year. I said, hey, what do you think about against this defense? He said, hey, I got it. My number two tight end walked in the building on Tuesday. I just remembered his name on Friday, or learned his name on Friday. And I'm going to ask this guy to handle all of our offense? You're like, no. Oh, sometimes you are hamstrung to the point that you've got to manage your coaching to what you have, not what you can do and what you can handle. So I'm not ready to say Matt's done at all. I thought he did a good job in year one. Year two was a back step. They know it. So you got to reinvent and change. This league changes too fast. It never gives you a chance. I think this year, in a good division, this was a good division. Even though Detroit was down, they had the lead in all but two games this year. This is a good division. This is a hard place to win football games. Packers and the Vikings could very well play for the championship game here. So I think that you need to figure out if Matt's that guy over the next year or two.
Yeah, I agree.
It's fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. Listen, human nature is if I make a mistake today, what I want to do tomorrow is rectify that mistake. And it's not rectified in most instances. My ego won't let me rectify that mistake by turning over control to somebody else. So
right, exactly. And look, double doink doesn't happen. You're in the Final Eight last year, right? Okay, that's fine. Minnesota was in the NFC Championship game in 2017, yeah. Missed the playoffs in 2018. They just went to New Orleans and beat a 13-3 team in what yeah. traditionally has been the hardest place to win in the league. Be patient. Let's and we're not, but we would just have to do that, I think. We changed too quickly.
Personally, I thought Matt stunk as a play caller this year, but I want to see Matt call plays next year mm-hmm. and rectify the mistakes that he made this year.
Exactly. And then if you've got 2 years of
now,
below
yes.
average, now you get, okay, hey, look, yeah. you're going to have to bring in somebody else, call the plays, and we're going to give you another year. This way we're giving you 4 or 5 years as a run, and we're not changing like it's a new pair of socks.
Mike, the wild card round of the playoffs was glorious. It was delicious. It was delightful. It was every one of these wonderful adjectives. What is the likelihood that what we see this weekend will mirror what we saw in week 1 of the postseason?
Yeah, it can. But it can. It'll be hard to remember. I did the number on Sunday in the studio, and I don't have it here out in San Francisco, but I think 85 to 87% of the games last week were one-score games, meaning during the game it was only a one-score difference. So every snap could have changed who was in the lead. That's a great deal. That's a great deal in playoff football. We always fall in love, guys, with the four teams we just saw win, and we forget that there were four teams sitting at home, feet up, getting their acupuncture, getting their massages, eating bonbons, and watching everybody else play. And now three of those teams who won last week have to go home and go back on the road and try to beat one of the top two teams in their conference. It's really hard. That's why the last 6 years, 1 and 2 seeds have gone on. So as much as you love Minnesota and Tennessee and Houston's comeback, just remember, they get some really good teams who are sitting around waiting for them to come into their place this weekend.
Speaking of the Vikings, how cool was the Kirk Cousins story in terms of him delivering in crunch time despite the weight of not having done that before? And B, what is the likelihood, in your opinion, against this very good defense that is getting healthy, that he can repeat that kind of performance?
And Tom, you hit the big point, getting healthy. San Francisco's defense first half of the year I thought was really, really good. I think as the season went on, when they had attrition, losing players to injury, they weren't as good. But they get a lot of those people back here and rested with the other guys. So they're, I think, going to be as close to full strength as you would see. The Cousins story was great because I've seen Kirk from his Michigan State days.
Right.
And it has always been, he's a really good, but can he get a big fish? And we finally saw it in college when he won an Outback Bowl in triple overtime. Gruden and I did the game. And then, you know, here we are, you know, 7, 8 years into his deal in the league, and Robert Griffin III in front of him in D.C. and all that stuff. And he gets the big win, the big ball to Thielen, the pass to Rudolph, gets him to a playoff win. So we can hold that he hasn't won on Monday night. He hasn't beat teams with a winning record. With good people around him, he got the ball to the right guys at the right time.
Yeah.
Going to be tougher here, but I think we answered Kirk Cousins can go on the road in a tough spot, win a playoff game, which to me was pretty cool feedback from last week.
You're still, as you mentioned at the beginning, Mike, that you're still a big sports fan. I know you have.
Yes.
So if you were a Bears fan, and when as we get to the Son of a Mitch Bowl, as we've been calling it, Waddle came up with this. This is Son of a Mitch Bowl 2.
Part 2.
Yeah. And how would you feel? I mean, would you be over it, or would you be saying, oh my gosh, with every level, it just makes it harder to deal with?
So as I get older, I understand that there is no positive in investing time over things you can't control. And it's over. It is the one that got away. It's the fish that got away. It's the mistake you can't erase.
That's two fishes. Two fishes got away from us, Mike. Both Watson and Mahomes.
You know, the water had a lot of good bait. So you had two fishes that got away. Makes for the better story.
Right.
Yeah, you cannot live with this envy of other teams and all the constantly. You just got to move on. It's a great storyline for, you know, a local angle on a game, and we should have had this, and then, you know, they come into Chicago, the Chiefs do it, Mahomes gives you the count of teams that didn't pick them in between, and it just, like, kind of rubs a little salt into it. You won't have to see that in Chicago for 8 more years once Patrick gets traded. So, he'll play him again in 4, he's coming back to town 3. So, don't worry about all that stuff. It's fascinating to discuss. I think those two guys have gone to places where they were at the right place at the right time as the game changed. You know, even when these guys were drafted, we were not in this mode where mobile, out-of-the-pocket quarterbacks were going to play championship-level football. The game has changed suddenly on us here, right in front of our eyes. Saturday football became Sunday, Monday, and Thursday football. Right, yeah. College ball became pro ball, and these guys are perfect fits for where it's going. Where, you know, Mitch runs, I think when Mitch runs, there, you know, he's a better quarterback, but he's probably more suited to the way the game was 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Speaking that way, before we let you go, Mike, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the NFL MVP to be, and that's Lamar Jackson and the style that he's played, and whether or not he can take that Ravens team to the top of the mountain, and how long can he keep them there on the style? Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's got a thought. What is yours on this?
So, yes, he can take them all the way to the top. Yes, they can win. Remember what Greg Roman did as the play caller with the 49ers, where I am today with Colin Kaepernick, and what they did. It was a different kind of ball they played, and they advanced and advanced and advanced and had a good run, right? I think they can do this. The question is, if he gets hurt, how different is the offense? I thought the best thing they've done is they've gone all in. Well, Robert Griffin III is the backup, and they draft McSorley out of Penn State, and they'll probably draft another mobile quarterback this year just so you have those guys around. If you need to put him in the game, your system's not going to totally change. Now, you're not going to have the Lamar Jackson factor. Tom, I will say this over and over, but the running quarterbacks who I grew up with, and I was mature at this point, but the guys who I'm like, okay, I saw their whole college careers and their pro careers, were Michael Vick and Donovan McNabb. And they were awesome because they could run away from people.
Right.
And we got to the point where they couldn't run away from people. This game is unrelenting. There's a reason that running backs are the most replaceable / disposable position in the league, because after 3, 4 years, you've taken so many hits, you lose speed, you get injured. Everybody seems to get injured. So can a quarterback do this? The only positive to me that I doubt my first thought and say, no, he can't, Russell Wilson's still doing it, man.
Right.
Russell Wilson's still doing it, and he is brilliant with how to slide, how to get out of bounds, how to avoid most of the big hits. And here we are, 14 playoff starts into his career, and Russell Wilson still has that speed, acceleration, elusiveness, and can run around. So can Lamar Jackson, can Deshaun Watson, can they be part of the Russell Wilson era of quarterbacking and make their legs last for 8, 9 years? That's the template, that's the model, and that's the way they need to go.
By the way, we had Kurt Warner on last week, and you two just, I mean, it's as good of a booth as anywhere.
It's a dream booth.
Thank you, man. I love Kurt. 20 years ago this January, Kurt and I really connected for the first time on the platform of the Super Bowl in Atlanta when they beat Tennessee, and it was the first time I did the trophy presentation. I've got a picture of my office. I had hair. I was slim. Kurt was – I'll tell you, 30 seconds. Tell you a quick story. Is that okay?
Sure, yeah.
So Kurt, as you know, very, very religious guy, right? And through that whole run, it was thank you, God, and all this stuff at the start of every interview. So I had a bet with a buddy who was produced with us at ABC. I bet you $50 that you can ask Kurt Warner a question and he won't thank God right away. Warner throws the touchdown pass to Isaac Bruce with a couple of minutes left. So there you got a game-winning play. So I'm like, I got it. I got this thing won. So we were on the podium. I got my arm around Kurt. Kurt, congratulations, Super Bowl champion. Tell me about the play to Isaac Bruce that won the game for St. Louis. Kurt responds, thank you, Jesus! I'm sitting there smiling in front of, like, the most people have ever seen me on TV going, I just lost $50. All right, let's keep going here, man. from that point on, I've loved Kurt. I love being with him. And we had so much fun doing that.
We could have had a prop bet on that. Yeah. That was really good.
You could have. Yeah. In these days, you could have. So
that's awesome. Well, keep up the great work. We'll be watching, obviously. And thanks for everything, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. We're noon Eastern. So that we're noon locals. It's 2 Central. on NBC an hour and a half before kickoff out here in San Francisco with our pregame. So hope
everybody
can settle in and watch.
Yes.
Awesome.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, see you soon.
You got it. There's Mike Tirico, NBC. He does everything. He's going to host the Olympics coming up. It's an Olympic year, don't forget. Waddle's World is coming up next. We have information on all the salaries the Cubs stars are going to make. It was a big debate going on. That's coming up next in Waddle's World.
It's that time again when we venture deep into the great unknown.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
A trip inside the mind of a multi-concussed former Bears wide receiver.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him, and he had an all-time day in the use of smelling salt.
Buckle up, boys and girls.
Tom Waddle, everything wants to have a Tom Waddle. If I had a football team, I'd like to have a Tom Waddle on my team because you draw from that.
It's time to go inside Waddle's World.
Tom Waddle did have to use a lot of smelling salt.
Thanks, John. Sorry, I was talking with Meller as our two four-team teasers may be in jeopardy with some late injury news. Waddle's World is brought to you by the great people at Wintrust Community Banks. They're Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/findus. Member FDIC. Have some baseball stats for us, don't you, over there, mister?
Yes, the Cubs have reached an agreement with a lot of their players.
Right.
Including,
and we call it avoiding arbitration, right, but nobody believes you go to arbitration
right
anymore.
One of the news that Jeff Passan said is that Javi Baez has agreed to the $10 million contract for this year in arbitration. They are still working. They still are working on an extension.
My guess is that will get done. I'd put my money on an extension for Javi getting done.
That seems to be the one that most are optimistic about. Long term, Bryant agreed to an $18.6 million deal, avoiding arbitration. Schwarber's at $7 million for the year. Contreras at $4.5 million. That's why he would be so wanted.
Cost
a young
control
catcher, and really his salary's down. Elmora's just getting $1.6 million, basically. And I think Kyle Ryan just under a million.
So they lost some salary due to guys moving on, but they've had to add salary because guys had to be paid to keep them from arbitration.
Yes, right. Jesse's been on the case, and I don't know what's going to happen with Bryant. As far as first, we got to wait for the real arbitration, and that arbitration is the arbiter's going to figure if he's going to be a free agent in 2 years or this year.
There's no chance he wins that arbitration.
I would think it's 99%.
Because think about it. If you're...
It's a precedent.
If you're... Right. So if Chris Bryant wins this arbitration hearing, do then some guys just... they just claim themselves to be free agents, right? I mean, like,
I don't know if that would go into law for everybody then. I'm not sure.
Well, no, it's just this case. But yes, it would be a great precedent for lots of
other people,
players who have been in similar situations.
So my point is that the best route for the Major League Baseball is to deny Bryant's ask, but rule in favor of the Cubs, and then change the rule.
But
going forward.
It's not Major League Baseball who's making the decision.
It's an arbitrator.
Yeah, so they have no power. Major League Baseball.
I guess the point I'm making is that, like, this seems very cut and dry, doesn't it? Unless there are facts we don't know.
Generally, because it's collectively bargained, everything seems to be hinging on the idea that there's a clause that says teams need to, within good faith.
Good faith, yeah.
And the whole terminology of good faith, because the Cubs waited until 10 days, like, was it 10 days,
yeah,
I think?
12.
Whatever,
think, like
the
that
exact amount of time they needed to wait.
Good faith is such a subjective
and
term.
And that's why, is the point is, you know, that's the argument being made in Chris Bryant's, you know, from his side.
I was acting in good faith with regard to the overall best interest of my entire organization and not just one player.
This is based on the player. That's what is collectively bargained.
Like, for instance, the Cubs used the excuse, I think it was, that they wanted Chris to go down and work on his defense.
Yes.
Which I think was fair. Yeah. I mean, but of course, it was a loophole.
They were just trying to get one more year of control.
Yes.
Listen, this is
only
what
to trade him
this
two
is
years
what I
before
would
he's
say
a free
to you,
agent.
Though, that you guys as a group collectively, as a players association, agreed to it. Yeah. You have to be able to see into the future how these loopholes will be handled. You're right.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Right. Just ask. So I don't get that. So I mean, listen, he's not going to win the arbitration. That's just not going to happen.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what.
Scott Boras is pretty smart, though. I mean, they could have come up with a really good case.
The day that decision comes down, if it comes down in favor of Chris Bryant,
would be huge.
The show changes dramatically.
It does. And, are they going to be able to trade
our
then?
Show?
Our show changes.
No, we're going to still talk about topic. Mitch over Watson and Mahomes. What are you talking about?
That is true.
No, listen, what I'm saying to you is it changes the outlook for all of these other younger players.
And it probably changes the Cubs' whole offseason.
Well, that's true.
Plans.
Because then now you only have 1 year.
You're right
about that.
I don't know how the Cubs trade Chris
you
Bryant.
Can't, with 1 year and
with
left
1 year, like the ask for them is going to be dramatically different.
You're not going to get anything for him. Listen, I'm not trying to use simple math here, but if you're trading Chris Bryant, you're getting twice as much if you win the arbitration than you are if you lose the arbitration. Seriously. Because the years of control are twice as long. Instead of 1 year left, you got 2 years left of him. So I would think whatever you're getting in return would be literally twice as much.
Or how about they just go to the table and hammer out a deal and say, let's live together.
Well, it takes two to tango.
I know it does.
It feels like that ship has sailed. I'm not saying you can't, but it feels like from all the reports.
Ship, right?
Yes. Would you guys like the players the White Sox agreed?
Yes.
Avoiding arbitration. They have agreed with right-handed pitcher Alex Colome to a $10.5 million deal, along with Evan Marshall, another right-handed pitcher, for $1.1. Larry Garcia receives $3.25. Nomar Mazara, who they just traded for this offseason, gets $5.56. And left-handed pitcher Carlos Rodon gets $4.45 million.
And they still only have $36 million committed to salaries. No, I'm joking. What is their salary? What do their books look like right now?
Well, they put a lot of money. I think they're over 100.
Are they?
Yes, I thought they were around 130.
Yeah.
Last I checked.
If I'm a Sox fan in this landscape of where we live, where the Blackhawks had a goalie score on them, where the Bulls can't get out of their own way, and now Wendell's hurt, where the Bears are so bad offensively, Cubs don't know which direction. I would think that every Sox fan is counting the days till pitchers and catchers.
People don't know this, but you bought tickets to Sox Fest.
I have not. No,
don't lie.
Yeah, I could be open to it. I mean, look, I hope we go to spring training, and I definitely want to go to White Sox spring training. The firepower that team has offensively. Think about it, Waddle.
Well, I know. Listen, you don't have to sell me. You're draped in Cubby blue every spring in Arizona.
I've never been dressed in the Haterade.
No, I'm not accusing you of that, but you will throw on a Javi Baez jersey every now and then.
Oh, yeah, a Javi Baez t-shirt for sure.
Mookie Betts set the record for arbitration-eligible players. It used to be, do you guys know what the record used to be? He just signed for $27 million.
So I would say it's $25.9 million.
Close, it's 26. But do you know who was the recipient of that?
Ken Griffey Jr.
No.
Tim Lincecum?
No,
well, I guess that
more
would have been a long time
that,
ago.
Yeah. More recent.
It wasn't Mookie Betts, was it?
No, that's a good guess, though, Meller.
Not really, because...
A guy that is now on other teams' radar, possibly.
Arenado?
Yes, sir. Mm. Yes, there you go. You and I would be good at Pictionary or whatever that game is. Not Pictionary, but what's the game where you guess, you give clues, and you guess?
It's categories.
There's a game, too. Do you know this where on your phones, we played this in Vermont in the bar, where you put the phone on your head, you give guesses, and the person's got to guess it.
Yes.
And then if you get it right, you turn it down, and a new clue comes up.
Correct.
It's pretty funny, especially if you've been drinking.
It totally went above my head.
What's the name of the game?
You have a phone on your forehead, okay?
Yes.
And then what? They see the screen?
Yes. So it's a game. You obviously
have to
log
into it. And so the person with a phone is the one who has to guess.
Correct.
Because you don't see what's on the screen.
So you and I are...
Is it a picture or a word?
No, it's a word. And there's several categories of this game, and I'm mad at myself because...
Let's try it. Why don't we try it?
Okay.
Oh, that's a good... We have to download it. Hold on. Do you have it?
I'll
get it. We can probably do it by the end of
it's good. I mean, there's a lot of swearing at times, too, because, like, if you don't get it and you can't think of the right... Have you ever played this game where you're trying to think of a clue F!
And then this will say, the password is... Like, one of us will leave, and then we'll go... The password is.
It's fine.
And then the listeners will
heads
know
up,
what
heads
we're...
Heads up. It's called Heads Up, right?
Heads Up. That's
correct.
Think
of the name.
Interesting.
Like, we had a couple of drinks at the bar.
Oh, for sure. Every game is better when you drink.
Yeah.
Can I give you one other Cubs nugget? I read this from...
Sounds painful.
I read this from Bruce Miles on The Athletic. As of now, it does not look like the Ricketts are holding court. Remember last year, the controversy
at Cubs convention?
At the Cubs convention, and everyone was up in arms. Why wouldn't Ricketts want to face the music on Addison Russell and ever? He's been so accessible in the past, and now when times are getting bad,
there will be no management.
And do you remember that he came out and he said, "I didn't know when we did surveys, it was always the lowest rated session." Well, now Bruce Miles says, as of now, it does not look like they've made an adjustment.
Okay. Chiefs defensive tackle Chris Jones and tight end Travis Kelce are questionable for the game against the Texans. Jones,
is that a real
questionable, Tom? We were debating this before coming back, whether this is like,
there's no probable
medium,
anymore.
I know. Medium.
If there's no injury report.
What does that even mean?
There's no, there is probable. I thought there's no doubtful.
Jones did not practice
is that what it is?
I think that's what it is.
With Coach Andy Reid saying the defensive tackle tweaked his calf during the week. That's not good. And Chris Jones had an injury earlier in the year, and that defense got back to being much, much better when he returned to the lineup. Kelce was a limited participant in practice this week with a knee injury that Reed describes as more of a bruise than anything. The Texans have a number of players listed as questionable as well, including wide receivers Will Fuller, who didn't play last week, and Kenny Stills. So keep an eye on the injury reports before you finally make your play. Is our bet in? Is our bet in?
Yeah, our teasers.
Why wouldn't we wait until like the last?
I don't want the spread to change.
I know, but like, what about if we find out that Travis Kelce is a one-legged guy and he's not going to play?
That's why it's called a gamble, Tom.
Okay. Can I ask you one of the dumbest? You guys are probably going to laugh at me, but I've always wondered this. You know how I know very little about wagering. This could be laughed at. Why is it that in sports gambling, you get the line whenever you purchase it? So if it's like, you know, plus 200, you get plus 200, right, even though the line goes down to 120. But in horse racing, if you bet on a horse and they're 8-1, it could be bet down to 3-1, and you
by
get
the time
whatever.
The race
you
goes
get
off,
that odds at race time. Why don't you? Why is that? I've always wondered
I'm sure there's a good explanation for it. I currently don't own that
so
that
it's actually a better question than I thought?
Yeah. I don't know why that is.
It's been driving me crazy recently.
Maybe because you're dealing with humans instead of animals? I don't know.
My guess is the horse aspect is because generally horses can be scratched, and so the field changes. And so because of that, the size of the field for the horse changes the odds dramatically.
The horse can't talk, so if you like ask the horse, how's your right hoof, you know, front right hoof feeling?
Why would it change, though, that?
No, but you know what I'm saying? Because, like, you could have an eight horse field be reduced to five by the time the start of the race comes in.
If it's an eight horse field,
you know, then
it
goes off as an eight horse. Yeah, I don't know. Well, because...
No,
I got it. I got the answer. I got it. Okay, you ready? When you are gambling in football, you're betting against the house. Okay, so you set that number. When you're gambling on horse races, it's pari-mutuel wagering. So basically what you're doing is you're betting into a pool.
There has to be a winner.
There has to be a winner.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Friday.
We figured it out.
I got my hat on.
And I have downloaded Heads Up, so whenever you guys are ready to play,
Kevin Durant was involved in multiple Twitter exchanges this week.
I loved
it. Including one last night. You love the Twitter.
The Twitter beef. I'm very passionate about this, too. Do you know what I'm passionate about with this, this whole thing?
I don't.
Do you know, Mellor, do you have a guess on my take on this is? I feel that so many people want Kevin Durant to be so many different things. And it drives me crazy that he's still criticized that he played with Golden State. He was their best player. They lost the NBA Finals the year they won 73. Why can't the best player get the same rights as the 50th ranked player when it comes to free agency? Why does he have to have a responsibility of moving to less places? You can go wherever you damn well please. And the people who call him a coward like Kendrick Perkins, it's absolutely asinine.
He would pound you into the pavement.
This is why KD, who Kendrick Perkins, and he's got a temper.
Into
I know.
The pavement.
But
you'd be dust.
But Kevin Durant put everything on the line for that team, came back from that calf injury. And he tore his Achilles. And you've got Kendrick Perkins calling him a coward? He's one of the greatest players to ever play the damn game. And Kendrick Perkins is calling him a coward? Get out of here.
Jimmy Butler was fined $35,000 and T.J. Warren was fined $25,000 for their little dust-up the other day. The public is betting heavily on LSU in the national title game. That's why I know I'm right, because I've been on Clemson for a long time. We have Clemson in our 10-team teaser, don't we?
We do.
Nice.
I didn't get in on that. I have no FOMO over that.
Well, that's fine. You know, if you weren't willing to spend $10 to join our club, then when we win 200 a man, back off, mister.
I don't think there's many contests that you can get 10 right in anything.
That's probably true. Eagles quarterback Josh McCown played through a torn hamstring against the Seahawks.
He had surgery.
Yeah, recovery could take up to 6 months. Does he know whether or not he's playing? Doesn't say.
When did he do it? Did he do it early in the game? Or did he do it on the last play when he was trying to run?
No.
I thought it was before that.
I think it was before that, yeah. Played the second half of the wild card game with a torn hamstring.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that is. Makes you love him even more, doesn't it?
I think their third stringer was Greg Ward, their receiver.
Yes, who was a quarterback in college.
Yes.
But has had to step in and play a fairly large role because they were so banged up on the outside. You mentioned Jeopardy, greatest of all time, was higher rated. The ratings for it were just crazy. There was only one program or one NFL game, Monday night game, that was rated higher.
Yes.
And that was the Seahawks and 49ers.
Rated higher than game one of the World Series and game one of the NBA Finals.
So Jeopardy, greatest of all time, was a rating success. And it's still on, right? Aren't they still doing this?
They just told us it's not coming back till Tuesday, so it's not on tonight.
So you want an answer to your question, Sylvie?
Yeah.
About gambling?
Was Waddle right?
Somewhat.
No, you just don't want to admit.
It's called pair mutual betting.
That's what I said.
He's exactly right.
The bet is mutual and the odds are established in relation to the number of people that are wagering on a particular horse. It also reflects that when you bet on a horse, everybody is taking from the same pool of money. Yeah.
Waddle hit it on the head.
Yeah, he hit it on the
head. I just didn't want to give him credit.
That's a green light for gambling this weekend. The fact that I was able to come up with that, I think that's an omen that we're going to win.
Can I get an assist for knowing that it was based on the number of horses?
Yeah, if you want. I mean, no, because I don't think that's correct.
It's not based on the number of horses.
I nudged you in the right direction.
It's not based on the number of horses.
You nudged me in the right direction.
It's a hockey assist. At least give me a hockey assist.
That was not a helper. That was the furthest thing from a helper.
Your mind is not working clearly enough without the help to nudge you in the right direction.
That was off the post. Greasy goals.
Parents admit to committing at least 4 parenting mishaps a week.
4 a week?
Yes. Parents commit almost 4,000 parenting mishaps before their child moves out of the house, according to new research. That's using math.
We need to define mishap.
A survey of 2,000 parents age 23 and over found the average parent commits 221 little hiccups per year, adding up to 3,978 between the child's birth and age 18. The top parenting faux pas was found to be allowing children to have too much screen time.
Yeah.
65%. Followed by accidentally teaching children swear words and letting children watch something that wasn't age appropriate.
Hold on.
So have you been...
Let's debate accidentally teaching them. Where are they going to learn?
They learn at school.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Well, they hear them first at home.
No, they don't.
Not always.
You drive around listening to Howard Stern drop F-bombs.
Right, but I don't. When he's in the car now, I'm better that way. He thinks Howard works with us, by the way.
You said you're better about it now. When did he first hear it?
He didn't hear it first a year ago, right away. And the first word was F.
There you go.
Right away.
So my point is while it may not have come out of your mouth, you basically sanctioned the F word by what you were listening to.
Well, and the problem was, on my drive home, I was listening to Howard. And then when we went out on a Saturday morning, the radio goes right on, and there's Howard dropping the F-bomb.
Okay, so I'm going to go first because I've been the parent the longest, and I have more kids than all of you. And in fact, I have as many kids as all of you guys combined. All right, I don't know what that means, but... I am.
Well,
yes.
Congratulations on your potent sperm.
Yeah, what do you want to
No, I just want to go first with regard to whether or not I've made these mistakes. Yes, I've allowed my children to have too much screen time when they were younger with their phones. Yes, I've accidentally used swear words in front of them. And yes, I've actually let my children watch something that wasn't age appropriate. So I'm guilty as charged, everybody. That's just me. You guys can perpetrate some sort of fraud if you'd like as super parents, but not me. I'm a good old-fashioned American parent that has made mistake after mistake after mistake.
I've never done that, but I taught my, because I don't have kids, obviously, but I got nieces and nephews. I got little kids. I got little people running around. I taught my niece that about meat sweats, that if she ate too much meat or steak, that she would start sweating in her sleep.
And that was just so you could have an extra.
And she got scared.
And that's because you wanted an extra roast beef, didn't you?
She went home and her mom is texting me about why won't she eat meat.
What a jerk. What a jerk. So do you guys at Mellor?
It's true that you guys don't get the meat sweats.
Are you perfect parent in there?
Oh, no. He's faux pas.
His kids don't know what a screen is.
We're pretty good, I have to say. There's no screen time during the week.
I'm kind of a big deal.
They get well. I mean, it's like I'm going to defer more to my wife over this than me. But we're very good with the screen time. Very little screen time. I have never sworn in front of my kids. Swear to you.
Do you know what? Did I tell you the story? What happened with Mason when he was younger? So when I'm in the car. And I would forget he's in the back seat and someone cuts me off. I would brake hard and yell at the guy and say, A blank. Use the A word. Hey, A blank. Not look at him, but just yell out A blank. And then that happened like 3 or 4 times. And then another time we were driving and I just hit the brake hard and no one cut me off. And it was like Pavlov's dog where he in the back seat goes, A blank. Just because he's used to when the brake gets hit hard.
To me, that's a proud moment as a parent.
It was pretty cool.
That's a proud moment as a parent. If I'm you, I'm proud as the day is long. So Mellor's perfect parents. Where do you rank?
I'm right there with all of that. Yeah. We all may. I mean, look.
I just told you. I was the first one to fall on the sword, as they say. Anyway, a bill will ban cell phone use for those under 21 in Vermont. A bill has been introduced in the state Senate that would make it illegal for anyone under the age of 21 to use or possess a cell phone. Listen, I spent a week in the Christmas time in Vermont. You're lucky if you get a cell reception. So this really isn't a penalty.
Okay.
Like, you barely can get cell reception in some spots. So to say, oh, you can't use a cell phone until you're 21. Hell, I can't get reception. What's the difference?
Do you want to get to Florida or Ohio?
You guys want to play a game?
Yeah.
Ready to play the game that's sweeping the nation. Public drunkenness. Exotic animals.
Guess you guys don't want the best poop story of all time.
Dumb criminals. Random stabbings. Or maybe just some good old-fashioned debauchery. Everything's on the table. It's the Sunshine State versus the Buckeye State as we play Florida or Ohio. And as always, listeners, feel free to play along at home.
Why don't we do Waddle's World After Dark?
I was just going to say, there's so much good stuff left in that folder.
At 5:30, really? Give us some of those.
We didn't even get to the breaking news. So Florida Ohio is brought to you by Fields Auto Group. See Fields first for luxury cars and SUVs and snacks. FieldsAutoGroup.com. Moment of silence for Neil Peart, the lyricist and drummer from Rush.
A legend.
Yeah, the best, hands down, the best live drummer I've ever seen, if not the best drummer of all time.
What was the best part about Rush was that they created this great sound. There's only three of them.
Yeah. Right?
Three-man band.
I've seen Rush twice and just watched him the entire time, the entire concert. 3 hours concert, it's a great concert. Anyway, I'm sure this is what he would want right after mentioning his death. Woman accused of trying to pee on cop while running down a man with her car.
Whoa.
And also that's running down a man with her car,
That's Tampa funky.
A woman tried to urinate on a police officer while being arrested last week for an incident and was hit with an additional charge while she was already in custody for allegedly running over a man months ago. The woman was arrested about 12:30 a.m. on January 1st after getting into a fight with her sister-in-law during a New Year's party. She was allegedly drunk and trying to drive away. The report said her sister-in-law tried to stop her, and she ended up biting her sister's hand, according to the report. She then began fighting with cops who responded to the scene, kicking out the window of the police car. Police bound her legs with a restraint, and then she tried to urinate on them while she was in jail.
That's my move. Yeah. When you throw the leg restraints on me.
This is the best part. While she was in jail, she was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon for allegedly running over a man or trying to run over a man outside of a bar with her SUV. She hit the man who had been hanging out with her at the bar while going about 15 miles an hour. She told police she was too high on cocaine to remember hitting the man.
Everything.
I'm going to go a little north. I'm going to go Jacksonville,
okay.
Florida.
Mellor?
I will go with Florida as well.
A woman was accused of trying to pee on a cop and later charged with running down a man with her car in Brooksville, Florida.
We got better manners than that in Ohio.
Carmen said earlier on the show today that he thinks the Packers are nearly a lock at Lambeau Field to beat the Seahawks. Does Jason Wilde, who covers the Packers, agree? He joins us coming up next.